Okay, got two things for you. I said I would have the radio address preview and tomorrow's commencement address. In this week's radio address, the president will outline several important legislative matters pending in front of Congress and note the dwindling number of days they have left in session to get this work done. He will call on them to pass a war supplemental that focuses on the needs of our military, to support our military families by passing an extension of the GI Bill that makes it easier for our troops to transfer unused education benefits to their spouses and children, ensure that our intelligence professionals have the tools to monitor terrorist communications effectively and quickly, that's the FISA law, approve the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, which would open a growing market for American goods, services, and crops, confirm nominees to important government positions, including Steve Preston, who the president nominated to be the next Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, pass legislation to modernize the Federal Housing Administration, reform Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to ensure they focus on their housing mission, and allow state housing agencies to issue tax-free bonds to refinance subprime loans. And at a time when Americans are concerned about gas prices, Congress needs to pass legislation to expand domestic energy production. Tomorrow night, the president will travel to Greenville, South Carolina, to deliver the commencement address at Furman University. It is a speech that calls on students to help build a culture of responsibility. It will reflect on how he went into public service because he was concerned about the culture and how he is heartened by the progress that has been made, especially in the young people who are embracing bedrock values of faith and family. He will talk about the importance of service to others, including volunteering and military service and being a part of the faith-based communities, contributing to the civic and economic life of the country by voting and public engagement and entrepreneurship, and being accountable to your family and to yourself, parenting, strengthening the family, and living lives of integrity. That's it.
Congressman Wexler has called on Scott McClellan to testify before Congress, and Congressman Conyers says that he has directed his committee staff to reach out to Mr. McClellan to make arrangements for him to talk to the committee. Does the White House have any objection to this kind of conversation?
I checked on it for you. The White House Counsel's Office takes these things when we have a formal request. We don't have a formal request yet. When we get one, that's when we look at the request, weigh it fully, as we do with all the others, and it's just not a decision that we would make prior to getting a formal request.
Could the White House block him from testifying if he wanted to testify, or how does that work?
Conceivably?
Yes.
Hypothetically? Which I'm not supposed to answer hypotheticals? Yes, I think so. The law would allow for that, but by saying that, I'm not suggesting that that's what would happen or not happen.
Has President Bush read McClellan's book, or does he have any intention to sort of find out what this is all about?
Well, he's been regularly briefed. I think he's read a lot of the articles about it, but I don't anticipate. He may or may not read the book. I don't know. We haven't talked about that.
You haven't bought it for him?
No.
Has he expressed any kind of feeling about it?
Sure. As I've talked about all week long, I know I haven't been here for you, but we were out on the road. but as I said,
I'm trying to make a living myself.
We've been out on the road. I've missed the podium greatly. But as I've said all along, that the president expressed disappointment and sadness at the situation, surprise by the charges that he has read about that are in the book. And we've known for a while that this is what the tone of the book would be. Of course, last November we knew because of the excerpt that came out. And then more recently, as with all manuscripts, the White House Counsel's Office has an opportunity to look at manuscripts for any possible classified information or any needs for executive privilege to be asserted. None of them were in this case. So we've known for a little bit of time that this was coming.
This morning you said that this wasn't about the messenger, it was about the message. But
sure.
Isn't it precisely about the messenger? Because those criticisms that Scott raises in his book, they've been out there. Usually they come out of the mouths of Democrats, but they've been out there. So isn't it precisely...
Does it make them true?
But what I'm saying, though, isn't it the fact that a former member of the inner circle is saying them, that it adds some degree of legitimacy? It's not just dismissible by saying, well, those are Democrats and they're our political opponents.
I don't think that any time that we have argued about this, that we've argued just about the messenger when it comes to Democrats either. We argue about it on the merits. And our central objection to the book is that it is not based in fact. And I think that one of the reasons we are puzzled and surprised and disappointed and saddened by it is because the charge, the loaded charge in the book, is that the president and his senior advisors purposefully misled people into war, and that we sent our young men and women into war knowing something that that we weren't telling the American people. That is not true. And several independent, nonpartisan reviews have been done about pre-war intelligence. Is it true that WMD wasn't found? Of course it was. And we admitted that. We have said over and over that the intelligence was wrong. And we have worked very hard, at President Bush's direction, to change the way the intelligence community works together. But what hurts us is the suggestion that we purposefully sent men and women to war without acknowledging the consequences.
But, I mean, he makes a number of charges, and not all of them are that direct. For instance, he says the president engages in self-deception. And that's not something that may be willful, but it still has significant consequences.
I think it's an outrageous claim. I've been here myself for a long time. I'm almost as long. I've known the president not as long as Scott has, but quite a long time. This is a president who I've never witnessed any self-deception at all. I think it's an absurd claim, and it's such a loaded charge. And you're right. When it comes from somebody like Scott, who is a close friend of many of us here at the White House, those of us who fully supported him before, during, and after he was press secretary, are disappointed by this and saddened by it. We certainly wish him well. We harbor no ill feelings towards him. We just are really disappointed, and we're going to combat the central premise of the book. And I don't, again, when you say that it's different because it's coming from him and not the Democrats, I've always argued about this on the merits. So regardless of where untruths come from, we're going to push back on them.
One more. Just in terms of the sort of the ongoing battle for public opinion, people who have been in the middle and can dismiss a lot of criticism because they'll say it's politically motivated, they're looking at this and saying, now hang on a second, this is different because you have a member of the inner circle. So it seems as though this would affect sort of the general sense of the public about the presidency.
I think that's giving this book a lot more weight than it actually carries. I'm sure I'll stay here. Martha?
Can we just talk about what isn't true in the book? I mean, you go to the part about weapons of mass destruction and that the threat wasn't grave and gathering, as the White House said. You said that's not true? Was there no exaggeration? Was there no hiding? Was there no spinning
about
the war?
Not that I'm aware of, but did we communicate about the war? Yes, and I would point you to the president's speeches. All the speeches that the president made leading up to it, made several comprehensive speeches making the case for why Saddam Hussein was a threat, which is based on the intelligence that we had, and not only the United States had, but that's what the world had. And in addition to that, he talks about, in this speech especially on February 26, 2003, when he spoke to AEI, again, before I was a part of the press office, so I encourage you to go back and look at it, as I've had to do myself, where he talks about that the benefit to a free Iraq would be to the Iraqi people and also to the region, and establishing a change in the Middle East when it comes to freedom and justice and democracy.
But the order of what was talked about at the time and the build-up to the war was largely about weapons of mass destruction.
I think that was, well, I think you could go back, you could weigh it either, you know, I'm looking at it, what I've seen is a comprehensive case for confronting Saddam Hussein. That's what the United Nations, of course, was talking about, specifically weapons of mass destruction. But there was also a gathering threat in terms of the nexus of working, for example, paying families of suicide bombers. And you know better than anyone, Martha, about the build-up to this, the reaction to this. The problem that we have is this. But paying them in the Palestinian territories and in Israel. That's something that Saddam Hussein himself said.
Just a general question, Dana. One of the things he talks about is spinning, exaggeration, I mean, what goes on the podium, which is an indictment of you as well. Do you think there's no spinning?
It's a term that I don't necessarily use. I come out here, I answer your questions, I answer them to the best of my ability based on the information and the facts that I have.
Define your job for me. I know Scott in the book says that his job, he believed his job was to advance the agenda of the President of the United States.
Sure it is. That's part of it, and my job is to be his spokesperson. But I also, as many of you in this room know, especially you, that I work very hard on behalf of the press as well. I defend the press, I advocate for the press, and I make sure that all of you have answers as quickly as possible to the best of my ability every single day, Saturdays and Sundays included.
Chairman,
let's stay on this, Anne.
Same subject.
in the book, it reports that there came a time when the administration ignored contrary evidence and went ahead with the evidence that it did have on weapons of mass destruction. Isn't that demonstrably true now that once the administration said that our intelligence is wrong?
No, I don't necessarily think so. Again, I wasn't here, but I would point you to the at least three that I can think of. Independent reviews of pre-war intelligence and the decision to go to war that all came to the conclusion that nobody purposefully misled anybody in this endeavor.
When you say that we've known for a little while that this was coming, was the manuscript well circulated within the...
No, it was tightly held. And in fact, I haven't read the whole thing myself.
Yeah. But when you said we knew, who was we?
The council's office is the recipient of the manuscript.
Was the president aware? Was the chief of staff?
As I said, he was briefed about it by members of senior staff who were aware of it, but it was a very tightly held thing. It was not circulated, and of course, I think you can know that it was pretty tightly held from our end because we didn't give any of reporters or anyone else outside the information or the manuscript.
Do you know whether anybody contacted Scott McClellan about the contents?
I don't know for sure, but I don't believe so. Mike?
Dana, you've used words like sad and disgruntled when talking about Scott in the book. Do you have a sense of his motivation after a few days of this back and forth about...
I won't question his motivations. He's free to have his opinions, and he's free to have a look back at his period. I think one of the reasons I think it's sad is for those of us who worked with him and saw how much he loved being press secretary, and how much he loved being a part of the back and forth in this room, and how much he delved into policy and tried to understand it as best as he possibly could, that to realize now that he looks back and looks so unfavorably upon his time at the White House, I think that's one of the things that's really sad. I mean, all of us are, you know, moderately talented people made very special because of an opportunity. And, you know, you can choose to use that opportunity in any way that you wish, and he's chosen this path. It's not a path that I will choose. Many others have not chosen, but I think that this is quite a unique circumstance, and I think that's one of the reasons it's sad. He's obviously very displeased and discontented with his time here.
How about the idea of somebody from the inner circle writing a book, whether it's a Republican president, a Democratic president? Is this bad for the overall office of the president if the president has to worry about somebody in his inner circle perhaps using something that is said in a meeting for a book?
I think there's something to be said for that. I think that one of the things that you have in any organization, be it your news organizations when you have editorial meetings or here at the White House, but especially here at the White House, that you want to have some level of trust that when you speak up, that it's going to be held in confidence. When you push back on something, that is held as in confidence. And if it's not, I do think that that's difficult for people necessarily, but I don't know of anybody at the White House who is sitting around a room thinking, oh my gosh, is he taking notes and going to report on this later? I think what's one of the reasons when I say we were so surprised, and not just puzzled, but in terms of surprised, at the tone of this book, at the language that he chooses to use, that's what is so disappointing and surprising to us.
Are you surprised he might vote for Obama?
I really don't care who he votes for. Connie?
Sorry, you're on the hot seat on this, and excuse me if you've already been asked this at some point, but have you harbored any doubts about the war, and if you did, would you speak up and would you resign?
Well, frankly, Connie, this isn't about me. Whether or not what I think on any issue is of no interest to any of you, maybe until I leave and write a book.
But, yes,
but my job, any press secretary's job, is to articulate the president's positions and message and answer your questions, and that's what any press secretary is supposed to do. So I'll continue to do it for the next 7 months or however long he'll have me here.
Crisis of conscience. What is
your have life? I had a crisis of conscience?
If so, what is
no.
Your
I have not, but I think that if I feel a need to speak up at any of the number of meetings that I have, or my if I need to step through the open door that the president has provided for me, I will do so without any concern about my future. And you have to be confident in coming up here every day, and I am. I have no crisis of confidence.
Well, let's just broaden it. If a staff member has doubts, do they have an obligation, any staff member, to speak up?
They have to all make that decision on their own. Anybody else on this?
No.
I'm going to go here to Jim. You have him this morning. Go ahead.
Has the White House gotten involved in the Fulbright situation with the students in the
Palestinian territories? I saw that report this morning. Obviously, we want people in the Middle East, students in the Middle East, to be able to come to America. The president thinks it's critically important to have that type of exchange, cultural exchange, between American students and Palestinian students or Middle Eastern students. And in fact, it's one of the things he talked about in the World Economic Forum speech just a couple of weeks ago when we were in Egypt. It's something that he's asked Secretary Rice and Secretary Spellings to specifically concentrate on, and Ambassador Hughes when she was here. And we've made strides, but I think Hamas obviously has made it very difficult for students to be able to take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves, like the Fulbright scholarships. I don't specifically have information from the White House. I'll have to refer to the State Department for anything more on that. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if it was addressed this morning. I apologize. Is the White House have any response or further response to the allegations of the Commerce Department computer being hacked into while in China, in touch with any of the agencies involved or with China?
I would refer you to the Department of Commerce on that. I don't have anything specifically here. I know that they are looking into the matter over there. And for security reasons, we don't comment on particular matters that are being investigated.
But is it a concern to the White House that...
We are continually working to increase our capabilities to make sure that all of our information is safeguarded, that any cyber risk that is out there, we take into account, and we are constantly trying to work on it. Other governments are too, so we take that into account. We're always looking for ways to safeguard our systems, and we'll continue to do so.
Okay.
Yes.
Question.
Yeah.
Is the president satisfied with the response of the private sector to safeguard computer networks?
I've not heard him say otherwise. I don't know.
This is a major concern, particularly with the utilities.
Well, I think that private sector corporations are probably just as concerned about their own information as we are here in the government.
But there have been reports that the private sector has not done anywhere near as much as the government has to safeguard this.
I just don't know.
If were ever to be shown that a power failure like the one that hit the Northeast in 2003 was the result of a cyber attack, would the president consider that an act of war?
Wow. Now that's a hypothetical I'm not going to answer. Olivier.
Yeah, I had a couple for you. One is, do you ever react to the cluster bomb?
The one from yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? I can't remember. It's been kind of a long week. Well, we are deeply concerned about the humanitarian impact, not only of just cluster munitions, but really the whole range of munitions that are used at war. It's a moral obligation to clean up, and we do so. You need to try to do everything you can to clean up after a conflict zone, to make sure that there aren't innocent victims that are hurt with unexploded weapons that are lying around on the ground. We've played an important role in it since 1993. We've spent more than $1.2 billion on such cleanup. No other country in the world comes close to that. We are strongly committed to working to address this problem. I would refer you to the State Department because I believe that they will be able to articulate for you some of the disagreements we may have with the tactics or the venue for addressing this problem.
And this morning you said you would assume that Prime Minister Olmert would be welcome here next week if he shows up at APEC, at the APEC annual conference.
I would expect that if he comes to the APEC conference that the President would meet with him.
It's not on the schedule. And would they meet at the White House? Would they meet in another setting? What would the?
I don't think the president has any plans to be anywhere but the White House next week for any sort of meeting. So if he comes, it would be here at the White House.
Okay, but so it's not on the schedule then, as of right now.
Not that I know of. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two questions, please. One, as far as Scott is concerned, we all have known him very well, and he was very close to the president, and mm-hmm. President is a loyal friend, and also he was like a family to him, and also he was close to everybody in the White House. Mm-hmm. What do you think have gone wrong? You think he was bitter about something, or maybe influenced from his Democratic mother or something?
I think I'll just leave that one alone. What's your second question?
And second one is that as far as terrorism is concerned in Afghanistan and on the Pakistan border, American NATO commander is now retiring, and what he said that what we expected from Pakistan was not done, and there is a long way to go as far as fighting terrorism. And now Pakistan has a new deal with the terrorists, and that means they will withdraw their forces from the border. And here CIA Chief Michael Hayden said that we are defeating terrorism and Al-Qaeda. So where do we stand now? Is the President briefed on all this? Where we stand now?
Yes, so you might not have heard this. President this morning spoke to President Musharraf, But followed on his meeting with Prime Minister Gilani in Sharm el-Sheikh, which was just a couple of weeks ago. We are very concerned, but we believe that the Pakistanis are as well, and that we need to continue to make sure that we can confront the terrorists there on the border.
Thank you.
Oh, wait a minute, Dana.
Okay, can we do one? Make a decision time.
Yeah.
I think it's half a minute.
I have one question
that okay.
has nothing to do with your book.
My book?
Now you're right.
This morning, the Washington Times published a statement by Marine Corps Sergeant Stephen Pryor of Bowie, Maryland, quote, "The photographs of unprofessional behavior by newly commissioned Air Force officers and President Bush on the front page of Thursday's edition are incredibly disappointing, clownish, and set a horrible example for everyone in the military," end of quote. Will this Marine Sergeant be punished for this statement or not?
Certainly not. I think he's referring to the U.S. Air Force Academy commencement ceremony, and the President had a wonderful time with 1,012 cadets personally acknowledging each of them.
You saw the pictures.
It was a wonderful event. Thank you.